Life on Earth is based on oxygen. It is the most abundant element on Earth. It comprises 45.6% of the Earth's crust and 73% of our body weight. It's pretty important. I had been researching the use of hydrogen peroxide derivatives for nearly 3 years. I was preparing a scientific paper for publication in a scientific journal, and I wanted to find out if there were any references. When you publish a paper, you put in references to any previous papers published which refer to previous work in this area. So I asked Interox Chemicals Limited, the company who make these products that I've been researching, if they had any references for me. No, but they said, we're in touch with our American company, and they've just come across a fellow in the United States who has a private library of 5,000 papers. I said, you must be bloody joking. No, we're deadly serious, and we're flying over a tape for you to listen to, because the guy is speaking about agricultural uses of hydrogen peroxide. I said, great. I would describe myself, as well as being, I hope, something of an agronomist, as a seeker after truth. And it was that part of my makeup which drove me to contact Walter Grotz and, in short, wound up ringing Walter Grotz on the transatlantic telephone to discuss my experiences and to learn from him his. On reviewing what we had learned, I took the view that we were in a position where farmers were spending more and more to achieve less and less. And it was because of the effect of the fertilizer and pesticide businesses, so we got the same deal in the United Kingdom. So I decided that if my scientific training was any good to me, I'd become an agronomist and I'd specialize on potatoes. I rented 160 acres of land. I grew potatoes on the system which I had thought out. Though I'd say it myself, I was reasonably successful. I invented, during this period of time, a foliar feed I'd had in the back of my mind, because my whole experience had taught me that in potatoes, the limiting factor to rate of dry matter production per day, that is to true growth rate after emergence from the soil, is the root intake capacity for nutrients. And some scientific research work which I had initiated, we always worked with the scientific people, and I went back to my old university at Leeds and to the scientific centres of excellence in Scotland. They're mostly in Scotland, in England, in the United Kingdom. It was notable that the Ministry of Agriculture and the Extension Advisors, which were free to the farming community, introduced a policy of sell the cattle and sheep, realize the capital, fertility comes out of a bag. And in conjunction with ICI, they offered a subsidy on nitrogen. So everybody started using too much nitrogen because it was cheap and the crops grew big and green and they got bigger yields than they had before. Well, of course, 20 years or so later, they started picking up the tab. The organic matter was down to the level of mineralized soil and they were in real trouble. Amongst my consultancy clients who were spread all over the eastern counties of the United Kingdom from south and midwest England up to Scotland, we were very successful in comparison with the national average. The national average on potatoes at that time was about 11 tons per acre. This is 25 years ago. It's now 15 tons per acre. So all the nitrogen in the world didn't do very much. My clients, using less nitrogen than most, but a lot more phosphate and potash and balancing with magnesium, gained yields of up to 37 tons an acre of potatoes, 34 tons saleable. But they didn't do it every year. And quite a number of them, using the same management system approach related to their particular conditions on the farm, were only making 18 to 20 tons an acre with a struggle. And in the last few years, I've watched these crops die back, even where they were irrigated, and particularly on some soils where they were irrigated. And they went yellow. In August, the lower leaves abscissed, and they were all through by the last week of the month, finished. And I wondered why. I have an intense curiosity, see, as to why. I need to know why. So I did some detailed examinations. In short, wound up with a conclusion that oxygen, or the prevention of air entering the ridge during periods of high demand for oxygen on the roots, because roots and the bugs which feed the roots and feed the plants, it's bugs which feed the plant doesn't feed itself, it's the bugs in the soil that digest the phosphate and pass it across in a compound form, and the plant exchanges energy supplies with the bugs, and this is a very happy symbiotic relationship. Better say I have a bee in my bonnet about irrigation, for the simple reason that water is the prime yield horizon factor in potatoes, in any crop, full stop. When water runs out, the crop is all through. As far as I'm aware, the only people who've gone into really great detail on research of the technique of application of water are the Netherlanders, the people from Holland. They spent 10 years establishing this particular machine. This machine here is the only machine that I know of which will apply water so that it is akin to rain. They guarantee it, they're little jets with a 75 centimeter spread of a fan shape, sprinkling out water behind the spray bar. And they will give a guarantee that that will not run any soil together whatsoever. Now, the problem I have with all these rain guns and large tethered units is the droplet size which is emitted, because it is the droplet size which runs the topsoil on the ridge, and particularly when you're in ridges, into a cement slurry on soils which have lost their structure. And when you have a cement slurry, you are in trouble, because oxygen cannot get into the ridge and carbon dioxide cannot get out. And when you have a crop of potatoes and you're irrigating it and you get the slurry formation on the unstable soils, 12 hours after you commence irrigating, that crop is into oxygen deficit, and if it happens to rain in the next few hours, the crop roots are closed off entirely, and under heavy sunshine and high temperatures, that's what creates the crop's demand. Plants are driven by sunlight energy. They have no choice but to try to assimilate it. And when they can't get oxygen at the roots, they can't get the activity of the roots, and the roots die. Now, you don't see that overnight, because inside the plant are mineral reserves in the stems and leaves. The lower leaves in potatoes become storehouses of minerals as the plant climbs up and erects its functional leaf area per acre. And so it's 3 weeks or four weeks later before you see the plant dying through overwatering. And the farmer thinks he's doing a real good job. But when you ask farmers why they're doing what they're doing, they don't know why they're doing what they're doing. They do it to get water on the crop as cost-effectively as possible, and they don't seem to care greatly whether they kill the crop or not. So, in my opinion, all rain guns should be picked up and dumped right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. It is failure of roots. That is the big problem in all crops. Crops die because roots get killed. Elimination of this provided us with a 37 ton per acre crop. That's the biggest crop we've ever recorded with all the experiments we've done. So we started looking for ways and means of eliminating this dieback curve. My proposal was that if we could get a compound which would supply calcium peroxide to the roots, we could get a release on contact with moisture which would make good the problem created by lack of oxygen in the soil. One of the things which oxygen-bearing compounds do is make potato stems physiologically younger. And those of you who know anything about potatoes will agree with me that when you have physiologically old stems like these, this is the tuber bulking curve of physiologically old stems of the same variety on the same field as the physiologically young stems here, there is an awful lot more yield potential. A, because they keep going longer. B, because they are more drought resistant. And C, because on oxygen treated plants, you will find that the internodes are shorter, the stems are thicker, they're more brittle, so they stand upright, and the leaves are bigger, so they intercept light better. And that's what the game is all about, ladies and gentlemen. You're all farmers. You know that it's light interception which creates the energy input for your crops to grow and yield. In fact, the plants were greener after they were treated with peroxyacetic acid than before. And it killed everything. And it is still killing everything, every known pathogen of potatoes, wheat, peas, beans, you name it, fruit trees. Peroxyacetic acid kills them on contact, zap, like that, provided it gets into contact. And you cannot find the product 1 minute after you apply it. When you take seed potatoes out of a dip, a tank, immerse them in this solution, air dry them, 1 minute after that you cannot find the product. All you find is acetic acid, which in common parlance is vinegar, and water. The oxygen has gone. It's killed all the bugs. It's oxygen that kills them. Nascent oxygen, because they're all anaerobic, aren't they? Aerobic organisms love it. It doesn't harm them at all. And the plants love it. In short, we found that not only did it kill organisms, but it would kill blight, for example. It kills blight, potato blight, just like that. It's the only chemical I know which kills blight, but it is a contact killer, and that is its limiting factor. It has to be well sprayed. You have to have a lot of droplets, get a good cover on the plant, and where it hits, it kills. And some smart aleck, knowing that this was a highly alkaline product, said, maybe if we use a lot of it, we can vine kill the plants. So they sprayed. We'd been using 2.5 liters per hectare, which is about a pint and a half per acre of a 5% solution. They sprayed 2 gallons an acre, and nothing happened except the plants grew greener than ever. But I think it's important that we should show you exactly what these magical chemicals can do. Here is Dr. Pickles, and he is standing at the join between here. You can see where the plants suddenly grow smaller. This is a 10-meter paired row length of potatoes with calcium peroxide at the roots. 50 kilograms per hectare. That's 40 pounds an acre, dropped in by a granule applicator at planting and dropped in behind, immediately behind the opening shoe of the planter. Next is untreated. You can see the pin, the white pin here, which divides the plot, and then is another treated plot, and you can see the horn goes up again. And this is the first time he had seen this type of effect. And it went on all season. We had a large scale. This is a 24 by 10 meter paired row length trial, right? 24 plots, fully replicated. The treatment is decided by a Cambridge number-crunching computer, which then does the analysis, statistical analysis, at the end of the season. We do not do anything other than using designs set up by Cambridge University. This shows you the effect at the end of the season. And the area here, which is totally dead, is that this line is the join. It's a wheeling, as you can see. But it's the join between the treated area. What we did, we planted the trial, and then we ran the applicator out up to this row here. And you can see this area, all this area is dead, and this area is still green and functioning. And that field, and look at the difference. This is viable potato, still underwater, the roots underwater here, and this is totally dead. And that particular site yielded 4.7 tons per hectare of saleable potatoes, which wasn't bad, considering that when we dug them, there was still 50% of oxygen left in the granules. We examined the granules that we dropped in, and the deal was that they would give us a product which would release 50% of its oxygen content in the first month after planting and 50% over the next 2 months. I'm still dickering with some Dutch researchers about this. They claim, in their view, that they would like to have the oxygen released over the whole growing period of the potato, which is anything from 4 to 6 months, depending on variety and how you're working it. And we found, in fact, and we've proven this over the last 2 years, that seed which is treated with peroxyacetic acid is totally free of external fungi or bacteria, totally. The major effect of calcium peroxide on potatoes is firstly, and all of these oxygen compounds, hydrogen peroxide I'll come to in a minute, all of these oxygen-bearing compounds have one standard effect. The stems are shorter internodes, thicker, bigger leaves, and so they stand up longer. That's the effect on tubers. That is a very typical effect on tubers, and it's even better than that. There's a very good example of what we can achieve with calcium peroxide, and as you can see, Arthur Boren is highly delighted with the quality improvement here. This is unwashed. When they're washed, you have to see it to believe it. The skins are clean, they're bright, whereas the untreated ones nearly always have some disease on them. These are almost always clear of disease at harvest. And I'm not claiming anything about disease control on tubers, because if I do, it comes under the heading of a pesticide. And at the moment, we're treating both of them as growth promoters. Growth promoters in the United Kingdom, you can sell. Pesticide, the government wants a 3-year approval, £30,000, $60,000 a year fees, plus 0.5% on royalties on all sales thereafter. We said to them, look, this stuff is already rubber stamped. You know, for the food industry, we're putting it through a plant, and it's not hurting the plant, and you already agree it doesn't hurt people when stuff goes through the pipes that have been sterilized with it. Why won't you rubber stamp it? But as you will understand, the boys are not interested in efficiency. All they're looking for is taxes coming in, see? This is my namesake, Alwyn Lyon of Eagle, Lincoln. And he's a great guy. He's one of the best potato growers in Lincolnshire. He gets, he's disappointed if he gets lower than 25 tons an acre. His average is nearer 29. And he's, in order to achieve this, these guys have to get out in the morning to meet the criteria that we require for good foliar feeding, which is covered in dew, 80% relative humidity or above, and a minimum of 7 degrees centigrade, that's about 53, 54 degrees Fahrenheit of temperature, before we allow them to use our stuff. And if we tell them, if you don't get these criteria, give us the stuff back, we'll give you your money back. Because we know it's needed. We need that criteria, A, to make sure that the leaf is open, and B, to make sure that the conditions are such that the plant can absorb through the cuticle and through the stomata, which is the major point of entry, the stomata will be open under these conditions, and you can get the stuff in literally within 5 minutes. Alwyn gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and he sprays the field behind this row of trees here, and he's onto this area with about 6 inches of spray left in his tank, and suddenly a wind gets up, and the dew disappears, the sun's out, and the dew disappears, and he stops spraying. Goes home and says, I'll finish that tomorrow morning. That night, there's 7 degrees of frost. So Alwyn hurriedly gets out at 4 o'clock in the morning and sprays the rest with a leaf feeder plus hydrogen peroxide on the rest of the field. There is a slight amount of damage on the leaves browning in the hollows. Here, you see where the weeds are? The hollows cut back a bit and lose their leaf area and don't compete with the weeds. So there's a slight amount of browning due to the frost. There is no frost damage on this area, and a return patch up at the top here, top of the field, you'll see it in a minute. No damage whatsoever, and the neighbours, which is this field here, immediately adjacent, is wiped out right down to soil level.